Welcome to today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger for Friday, March 15th, 2024. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik, and here is our first story from the Mason City Globe Gazette. It's entitled, Judge Denies Trump Case Dismissal. Former President Accused of Retaining Sensitive Information. It's written by Eric Tucker, Alana Durkin-Richer, and Terry Spencer of the Associated Press, and the dateline is Fort Pierce, Florida. A federal judge rejected a bid by Donald Trump to throw out his classified documents criminal case Thursday and appeared skeptical during hours of arguments of a separate effort to scuttle the prosecution ahead of trial. U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon issued a two-page order saying the Trump team raised various arguments warranting serious consideration, but a dismissal of charges was not merited. Cannon, who was nominated to the bench by Trump, made clear during more than 3.5 hours of arguments that she was reluctant to dismiss one of the four criminal cases against the 2024 presumptive Republican presidential nominee. She said at one point that it would be quite an extraordinary step to strike down an Espionage Act statute that underpins the bulk of the felony counts against Trump, but that his lawyers contend is unconstitutionally vague. As Trump looked on in the courtroom, his attorneys pressed Cannon to throw out the case, arguing he was legally entitled to keep the sensitive records he is charged with illegally retaining after he left the White House. His lawyers say the Presidential Records Act gave him the authority to designate the records he took with him to his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida as personal property. Prosecutors countered that those records were clearly presidential, not personal, and included top-secret information and documents related to nuclear programs and the military capabilities of the U.S. and foreign countries. Cannon's ruling covered only the Espionage Act arguments. A separate motion argued Thursday about whether Trump was entitled under the Presidential Records Act to retain the documents remains pending, but the judge also seemed disinclined to throw out the case on those grounds, too. It's difficult to see how this gets you to the dismissal of an indictment, she told a Trump lawyer at one point. The hearing was the second this month in the case in Florida, which unfolded slowly in the courts since prosecutors first brought charges last June. Cannon heard arguments March 1st on when to schedule a trial date, but has yet to announce one and gave no indication Thursday on when she might do so. Prosecutors have pressed the judge to set a date for this summer. Trump's lawyers hope to put it off until after the election. The 1978 statute, known as the Presidential Records Act, requires presidential documents to be turned over to the National Archives and Records Administration, though former presidents may retain notes and papers created for purely personal reasons. Trump's lawyers contend that he was free under that law to do with the records as he pleased. He had original classification authority, the defense lawyer Todd Blanche said. He had the authority to do whatever he thought was appropriate with his records. Prosecutors assert the files Trump is charged with possessing are presidential records, not personal ones, and the statute was never meant to permit presidents to retain classified and top-secret documents like those kept at Mar-a-Lago. The documents charged in the indictment are not personal records, period, said David Harbach, a member of Special Counsel Jack Smith's team. They are nowhere close to it under the definition of the Presidential Records Act. Trump's lawyers also challenged as overly vague a statute that makes it a crime to have unauthorized retention of national defense information, a charge that forms the basis of 32 of the 40 felony counts against Trump in the case. Defense lawyer Emile Beauvais said ambiguity in the statute permits what he called selective enforcement by the Justice Department, leading to Trump being charged but enabling others to avoid prosecution. Beauvais suggested a recent report by Special Counsel Robert Hur that criticized President Joe Biden's handling of classified information did not recommend charges proved his point about the lack of clarity. Jay Bratt, another prosecutor with Smith's team, disputed that there was anything unclear about the law, and Cannon pointedly noted that striking down a statute would be quite an extraordinary step. Trump is accused of intentionally holding on to some of the nation's most sensitive documents at Mar-a-Lago, only returning a fraction of them upon demand by the National Archives. Prosecutors say he urged his lawyer to hide records and to lie to the FBI by saying he no longer was in possession of them and enlisted staff to delete surveillance footage that would show boxes of documents being moved around the property. Cannon suggested in the past that she sees Trump's status as a former president as distinguishing him from others who have held on to classified documents. After the Trump team sued the Justice Department in 2022 to get his records back, Cannon appointed a special master to conduct an independent review of the documents taken during the FBI's Mar-a-Lago search. That appointment was later overturned by a federal appeals court. On Thursday, she wrestled with the unprecedented nature of the case, noted that no former president had ever faced criminal jeopardy for mishandling classified information. But Bratt responded, "There was never a situation remotely similar to this one." The other story on the front page of the Globe Gazette today is entitled, "Lawmakers See TikTok as China's Tool, Company Downplays Roots." Social media platform faces threat of nationwide ban as bill requiring sale advances. This is written by D.D. Tang of the Associated Press, and the dateline is Washington. If some U.S. lawmakers have their way, the United States and China could end up with something in common. TikTok might not be available in either country. The House approved a bill Wednesday requiring the Beijing-based company ByteDance to sell its subsidiary TikTok or face a nationwide ban. It's unclear if the bill will become law, but it reflects lawmakers' fears that the social media platform could expose Americans to Beijing's malign influences and data security risks. But while U.S. lawmakers associate TikTok with China, the company, headquartered outside China, has strategically kept its distance from its homeland. Since its inception, the TikTok platform has been intended for non-Chinese markets and is unavailable in mainland China. It pulled out of Hong Kong in 2020 when Beijing imposed a national security law on the territory to curtail speech. As data security concerns started to rise in the U.S., TikTok sought to reassure lawmakers that data gathered on U.S. users stays in the country and is inaccessible to ByteDance employees in Beijing. TikTok's parent company is following the same playbook as many other Chinese companies with global ambitions. To win customers and trust in the United States and other Western countries, they are playing down their Chinese roots and connections. Some insist they be called global companies instead of Chinese companies. But for TikTok, this may not be enough. The House bill passed overwhelmingly on a 352-65 vote. Its prospects in the Senate are uncertain, but if it clears both chambers, President Joe Biden said he would sign it into law. The moves in Washington threaten the app's survival and cast a spotlight on the quandary that many private Chinese companies have found themselves a part of as they seek to engage Western markets at a time of souring U.S.-China relations. It's the most difficult time for Chinese tech companies and private businesses in decades as tensions and rivalry between the United States and China continue to grow, said Zhiquan Zhu, professor of political science and international relations at Bucknell University. These companies and businesses face squeezing from both sides as they struggle to survive, Zhu said. While the U.S. and other Western countries have imposed sanctions or restrictions on these companies, China itself has moved to favor state-owned enterprises in recent years, leaving little room for Chinese tech and private businesses to operate. Alex Capri, senior lecturer at the University of Singapore and research fellow at Heinrich Foundation, agreed that companies like TikTok with Chinese roots are really stuck in two polar extremes between the heavy-handed Communist Party and the deeply suspicious West. Any Chinese tech company has to operate under a cloud of suspicion, and that's because there's a total breakdown of trust, Capri said. With the rise of techno-nationalism, by which technological capabilities are deemed a national strategic asset, China's tech companies are obligated by Beijing's laws and rules to turn over data and have become essentially a de facto representative of China's ruling Communist Party, Capri said. That in itself makes it very challenging for companies like TikTok, he said. In 2018, Zhang Yiming, the founder of ByteDance, towed the party line after Beijing shut down ByteDance's joke app. He apologized publicly for his company's deviations from socialistic core values and promised to comprehensively rectify the algorithm on its news app and add significantly more layers of censoring, a move considered necessary for any company to survive in China. That explains the oft-repeated claim by Representative Mike Gallagher, chair of the House Select Committee on China's Communist Party, that there's no such thing as a private company in China. Congressional mistrust of TikTok was evident at a January 31st hearing when Senator Tom Cotton repeatedly asked CEO Shou Zi Chu if he is a Chinese citizen beholden to the Communist Party. Chu, who is Singaporean, repeatedly said no. Chu, in another congressional hearing last year, told Congress that we do not remove or promote content on behalf of the Chinese government. In a recent interview with Wired magazine, Chu acknowledged that the company's origins have given TikTok a bigger trust deficit than most other companies. Maybe our trust starting line is behind other businesses, but I also think that there are very serious approaches that we've taken to try and earn that trust and to close that gap, Chu said, citing efforts by TikTok to protect U.S. user data, be transparent, and not be manipulated by any government. As TikTok fights for survival, it has made a move that is very present in American politics. It's engaging in heavy lobbying and appealing to its 170 million U.S. users to contact their lawmakers to say a TikTok ban would infringe on their free speech rights. It's won over one powerful critic, former President Donald Trump, in a reversal, came out against the TikTok legislation. But Trump, for all his sway with congressional Republicans, couldn't prevent House passage. And in another article related to phone apps, Wordle clones hit with takedown notices. Developers share frustrations online. This is written by Wyatt Grantham Phillips and Jetaine Lewis of the Associated Press, and the dateline is New York. The New York Times is fighting off Wordle clones, arguing that numerous games inspired by the mega-popular word-guessing game infringe on its copyright protections. Hundreds of copycats have emerged since Wordle skyrocketed to internet fame less than 3 years ago. And now the Times, which purchased the game in 2022, is sending takedown notices to people behind some of the lookalikes. The Times has filed several Digital Millennium Copyright Act takedown notices to developers of Wordle-inspired games, which cited infringement on the Times' ownership of the Wordle name, as well as its look and feel, such as the layout and color scheme of green, gray, and yellow tiles. A New York Times company spokesperson said the company has no issue with people creating similar word games that do not infringe its Wordle trademarks or copyrighted gameplay, but the company took action against one user on software developer platform GitHub who created a Wordle clone project that included instructions on how to create a knockoff version of Wordle, and against others who shared his code. As a result, hundreds of websites began popping up with knockoff Wordle games that use the Times' Wordle trademark and copyrighted gameplay without authorization or permission, the spokesperson said. GitHub gave the user an opportunity to alter the code and remove Wordle references, the spokesperson added, but he declined. The Times' DMCA takedown notices were first reported by tech outlet 404 last week. Numerous impacted developers have also taken to social media to share their frustrations. Many said that their games, which range from Wordle-like offerings in other languages to more guessing games, would be taken down as a result. Vignesh Venkat, a California-based software engineer, said he built his variant of Wordle several years ago when the game first gained popularity. His game, Hardle, was initially created for a friend's gender reveal event where guests encouraged him to put it online for public consumption. Venkat said he had since forgotten about his game, only playing it sporadically in recent years when reminded by friends. "I don't know what they're really going to get out of this," he said. "I mean, the Times probably have like millions of people playing their game, and there's like hundreds of thousands of people playing mine." Robert Braunis, a professor of intellectual property law at George Washington University's law school, added that a German language Wordle spinoff that he and his wife used to play, which was once found at wordle.at, appeared to have been removed in the last week or two, suggesting that it may have also received a takedown notice. As of Monday, a message on Wordle AT's site, now named Grid Games, says the game was voluntarily removed after receiving a complaint with reference to U.S. trademark law. The Times' spokesperson said Monday that the company first contacted GitHub on January 2nd about the infringement issues, noting that hundreds of people have been notified through GitHub since. DMCA notices act as a tool for copyright holders to get content that infringes on their intellectual property taken down. Impacted users can still fight to keep what they published up, but that opens up the possibility for costly litigation. As a result, many don't dispute takedowns. Software engineer Josh Wardle created the daily puzzle game and made it public back in 2021. In January 2022, he sold Wordle to the Times for a reported seven-figure payday. The game rose in popularity, becoming a viral sensation that inspired other games like Hurdle, the music version of Wordle, where you guess a song name within six listens, and Queerdle, which uses words associated with the queer community. On Friday, the Times is celebrating the 1,000 Wordle puzzle with what they call a nationwide party inspired by past Wordle answers. Our next article is entitled, Top Dem Wants Election. Netanyahu stands in the way of peace in the region, says Schumer. This is written by Mary Claire Jelonek and Ellen Nickmeyer of the Associated Press, and the dateline is Washington. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a Democrat from New York, called on Israel to hold new elections, saying Thursday he believes Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has lost his way and is an obstacle to peace in the region amid a growing humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Schumer, the first Jewish majority leader in the Senate and the highest-ranking Jewish official in the U.S., strongly criticized Netanyahu in a 40-minute speech on the Senate floor. Schumer said the prime minister put himself in a coalition of far-right extremists, and as a result, he has been too willing to tolerate the civilian toll in Gaza, which is pushing support for Israel worldwide to historic lows. Israel cannot survive if it becomes a pariah, Schumer said. The high-level warning comes as an increasing number of Democrats push back against Israel and as President Joe Biden steps up public rhetoric on Netanyahu's government, arguing that he needs to pay more attention to the civilian death toll in Gaza amid the Israeli bombardment. The Biden administration imposed sanctions Thursday on three extremist Israeli settlers in the occupied West Bank who are accused of harassing and attacking Palestinians to pressure them to leave their land. Schumer has so far positioned himself as a strong ally of the Israeli government, visiting the country just days after the October 7th attack by Hamas and giving a lengthy speech on the Senate floor in December decrying brazen and widespread anti-Semitism, the likes of which we haven't seen in generations in this country, if ever. But he said on the Senate floor Thursday that the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past. The United States cannot dictate the outcome of an election in Israel, Schumer said, but a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open decision-making process about the future of Israel at a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government. The speech drew a swift reprisal from Republicans. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky, said on the Senate floor immediately after Schumer's remarks that Israel deserves an ally that acts like one and that foreign observers ought to refrain from weighing in. The Democratic Party has an anti-Israel problem, McConnell said. Either we respect their decisions or we disrespect their democracy, he said. Our next article is entitled, Egypt Appeals for Land Deliveries. Israel plans to advance ground offensive in southern city of Rafah. This comes from the Associated Press and the dateline is Cairo. Egypt's top diplomat appealed Thursday for an urgent increase in the amount of humanitarian aid going into besieged Gaza through land crossings, adding that people in the devastated territory cannot wait until a U.S.-planned temporary port be built for sea shipments. Foreign Minister Samah Shoukry spoke as U.S. military representatives were expected in Israel this week to further coordinate a planned U.S. floating pier that will be built off the coast of Gaza. The United States and other countries have also been airdropping food into northern Gaza in recent weeks. But aid groups said their airdrops and bringing sea shipments are far less efficient and effective than bringing in food by land routes, which Israel has severely restricted. Shoukry said the seaport is expected to be completed in 2 months. What shall we do during those 2 months? Shall more children continue to die until this port is constructed? He asked during a joint news conference with the Spanish counterpart Jose Manuel Albares in Cairo. President Joe Biden ordered the U.S. military last week to set up a temporary port off the coast of Gaza to carve out a sea route for food and other aid. The Pentagon says the construction of a massive floating pier will take weeks. We should be realistic in dealing with the situation, and we cannot afford any delays, said Shoukry. What we have at our disposal now are land crossings. He insisted that Israel should be held accountable for restricting the passage of aid to Gaza, urging it to allow relief assistance through all 6 border crossings with the Strip. On Wednesday, Israel said it plans to tell 1.4 million Palestinians displaced in Gaza's southern city of Rafah to seek shelter in humanitarian islands in central Gaza ahead of a planned military offensive into the south. Humanitarian groups fear a military offensive into the densely crowded area would be a catastrophe. Most of Gaza's 2.3 million people have been forced from their homes. Israel's offensive and siege has killed more than 31,314 Palestinians, the Hamas-run territory's health ministry said Thursday. The ministry does not differentiate between civilians and combatants in its count, but says women and children make up 2/3 of the dead. DA receptive to delay in Trump hush money case. Criminal trial slated to start March 25th could be postponed a month. This comes from the Associated Press, and the dateline is New York. Prosecutors said Thursday they are open to delaying the start of Donald Trump's New York hush money criminal trial by a month to give the former president's lawyers time to review evidence they only recently obtained from a previous federal investigation into the matter. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office said in a court filing that it does not oppose adjourning the trial for 30 days, but said it would fight the defense's demand for a longer delay. Judge Juan Manuel Merchan did not immediately rule. Jury selection is scheduled for March 25th. The hush money case is one of 4 criminal indictments against Trump, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Short trial delays because of evidence issues aren't unusual. The New York case centers on allegations that Trump falsified his company's internal records to hide the true nature of payments to his former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, who helped Trump bury negative stories during his 2016 presidential campaign. Among other things, Cohen paid porn actor Stormy Daniels $130,000 to suppress her claims of an extramarital sexual encounter with Trump years earlier. And jury says father of gunman guilty in school shooting. Parents faced trials after their son killed 4 in 2021 in Michigan. This is written by Ed White of the Associated Press, and the dateline is Pontiac, Michigan. A jury found the father of a Michigan school shooter guilty of involuntary manslaughter Thursday, a second conviction against the teen's parents, who were accused of failing to secure a gun at home and doing nothing to address acute signs of his mental turmoil. The verdict means James Crumley joined his wife Jennifer Crumley as a cause of the killing of 4 students at Oxford High School in 2021, even without pulling the trigger. They had separate trials as the first U.S. parents to be charged in a mass school shooting committed by their child. Jennifer Crumley was convicted of involuntary manslaughter in February. Ethan Crumley, now age 17, is serving a life sentence for murder and terrorism. James and Jennifer Crumbly each face as much as 10 years in prison during sentencing April 9th. Prosecutors focused on two key themes. The parents declined to take Ethan Crumbly home after a meeting at the school over a morbid drawing on the teen's math assignment before the shooting, and the teen's access to a handgun that James Crumbly purchased only 4 days earlier. Now we'll take a quick look at sports before we move on to the Fort Dodge Messenger. In college basketball, UConn rolls to Big East semifinals. Tristan Newton and Donovan Klingon each had 13 points and 7 rebounds, and UConn blitzed Xavier in the second half Thursday, opening the postseason with an 87-60 blowout in the Big East tournament quarterfinals. Alex Caraban and Cam Spencer both scored 12 in a balanced performance by the top-seeded Huskies, who have won 5 straight games and 19 of 20. The defending national champs will play number 5 seed St. John's in the first semifinal Friday evening at Madison Square Garden. St. John's defeated Seton Hall 91-72. Rick Pitino returned to the Big East tournament for the first time in 11 years and led 5th-seeded St. John's over 4th-seeded Seton Hall. Providence defeated Creighton 78-73. Devin Carter had 22 points and 11 rebounds as number 7 seed Providence secured a huge victory for its postseason resume, holding off 2nd-seeded Creighton. The Friars will play number 3 seed Marquette in the semifinals after it beat number 6 seed Villanova in overtime. In the ACC, North Carolina defeated Florida State 92-67. Pitt defeated Wake Forest 81-69. North Carolina State defeated Duke 74-69. And Virginia beat Boston College 66-60 in overtime. In the Big 12, Texas Tech beat BYU 81-67. Houston defeated TCU 60-45. Iowa State beat Kansas State 76-57. And Baylor defeated Cincinnati 68-56. In the Big Ten, Michigan State 77, Minnesota 67, Wisconsin 87, Maryland 56. Ohio State defeated Iowa 90-78, Indiana 61, Penn State 59. And in the Mountain West, Utah State 87, Fresno State 75 in overtime, San Diego State 74, UNLV 71 in overtime. Colorado State took down Nevada 85-78. In the Pac-12, Arizona defeated USC 70-49. Oregon defeated UCLA 68-66. Washington State over Stanford 79-62. And in the SEC, Mississippi State 70, LSU 60, South Carolina 80, Arkansas 66, Texas A&M 80, Mississippi 71. Now it's time to remind you that you are listening to the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. All material heard on IRIS is intended solely for the use of the blind and print disabled. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. If you have any comments on this or any other IRIS program, please give us a call at area code 515-243-6833. Now we'll turn to the Fort Dodge Messenger. And our top story there is FDCSD buys concession equipment, mowing contract awarded for district properties. It's written by Bill Shea. A new concession stand will be part of the update of iconic Dodger Stadium that has commenced in Fort Dodge. The equipment inside that new concession stand will be all new as well. District Superintendent Josh Porter said it was decided to replace the equipment rather than haul the old stuff back in when the construction is done. On Monday, the district's Board of Education approved buying new appliances from Rapids Wholesale Equipment Company of Marion for $24,823.58. The district will be receiving a new freezer, refrigerator, warming machine, hot dog roller, pretzel warmer, hot chocolate machine, and coffee machine. The purchase contract includes delivery and installation. Dodger Stadium, built in 1939, is getting its first major overhaul since it opened. In addition to the concession stand, the project will produce new locker rooms, restrooms, a new entryway, reconfigured parking, and updated lighting and security cameras. Colossia Construction of Fort Dodge has a $4.87 million contract for the job. The work is to be done by May of 2025. Also on Monday, the board hired Stone Creek Landscape and Nursery of Fort Dodge to do the mowing and weed control on district properties. The company was awarded a 3-year contract. It will be paid $42,150 this year, $43,500 in 2025, and $44,000 in 2026. Our next article is entitled, Bill to Fund School Safety, Staff Firearm Training Passes House. This is written by Robin Opsahl of the Iowa Capitol Dispatch. House lawmakers approved legislation Wednesday that would provide funding for schools to implement safety measures, including allowances for schools to pay for arming staff. House File 2652, passed in a 59-35 vote, would create a $3 million grant program for schools to purchase infrastructure and equipment related to employee permits to carry weapons, as well as providing schools up to $25,000 for firearm training and stipends for employees who go through training. These provisions work in conjunction with House File 2586, passed by the House in February, which would create a training and permit system for school staff to carry firearms on campus as a measure to improve school safety. Representative Carter Nordman, a Republican from Panora, said the bill comes after 10 weeks of discussion on school safety in the wake of the Perry High School shooting January the 4th, where a gunman killed and injured students as well as the school principal, Dan Marburger. As horrific as the events at Perry were, it has spurred a productive conversation within this body on the actions we can take to secure our schools and ensure we have a safe learning environment across the state, Nordman said. Nordman said House Republicans believe improving school safety in Iowa requires a multi-pronged approach and that the two bills introduced this session take multiple steps to improve safety measures. In addition to the measures on funding for training staff to carry firearms, the bill also creates a pilot program for schools to implement gun detection software through existing school cameras. It would also require every school building to have an emergency radio system paid for using federal American Rescue Plan funding, as well as allowing some schools to use mobile panic alert systems. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst said that while she and Democrats support measures to improve school safety, she did not support use of government funding to bring guns into schools. She also criticized the movement toward funding for firearms in schools while the legislature has not provided overall funding for Iowa's K-12 education. House lawmakers passed a 3% increase to per-pupil funding for Iowa's public schools in February, but the Senate has yet to take up the bill. I also fear that we are creating a program in which teachers who are incentivized to bring guns to school might be put at an advantage that other teachers who choose not to bring guns to school might also feel, Confirst said. I realize that this doesn't directly appropriate the money, but it does create the program that allows for that to happen. I have concerns fundamentally about spending taxpayer dollars to put more guns in our schools. Nordman argued that restrictive gun laws supported by Democrats would not prevent shootings that have happened at Iowa educational spaces in recent years, including Perry, Des Moines East High School, and Starts Right Here, but that the bills presented by Republicans provide real preventive solutions to gun violence at school. The unfortunate reality remains that bad things can still happen, Nordman said. Rather than live in denial of that fact, House Republicans are working to lower response time to school emergencies. Nordman cited a Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll published Sunday that found a majority, 60% of Iowans, said they support arming teachers and staff in schools, with 38% opposing and 1% not sure. That support was higher among parents who have children younger than age 18 who were polled, with 65% in favor of school staff having firearms in school and 34% in opposition. No parent should have to worry about their students' safety, Nordman said. No spouse should have to worry about their significant other coming home from a day of teaching. Schools should be a place for students and teachers to grow and learn. This bill in front of us offers solutions. The bill we passed last week offers solutions. That is what House Republicans do. We offer solutions. The bill goes to the Senate for further consideration. And the final story from the front page of the Messenger today is entitled, Iowa Farm Tax Law Changes En Route. This is written by Karen Schwaller, and the dateline is Spencer. farmland income taxation after retirement and decisions regarding capital gains deductions were part of a February presentation put on by the Spencer Ag Committee at the Northwest Iowa Ag Outlook in Spencer. Christine Tigran outlined new directives for this year. She is an adjunct assistant professor at Iowa State University in the Agricultural Education and Studies Department and the director for the Center for Agricultural Law and Taxation. Tigran said Iowans no longer pay Iowa tax on their retirement income. This law began in 2023, but she said Iowans are now filing their first returns since that law went into effect. This affects people who are disabled or who are 55 years of age or older who receive qualified retirement income, including IRA and 401k distributions, IPERS pensions, and more. She said that for many farmers whose income was reinvested into their farms, they may not have any of those distributions. But if they receive rent from their farmland after they retire, that rental income will be excluded from Iowa tax. Tigran said Iowa code allows eligible individuals to exclude from Iowa income the net income received from a farm tenancy agreement covering real property that has been owned by an eligible individual for 10 or more years if the eligible individual materially participated, worked 500 hours or more in a farming operation for 10 or more years. Time that spouses worked on the farm also counts toward the number. If I worked 100 hours on the farm and my husband worked 500 hours, we both worked 600 hours on the farm in the eyes of the law, and that's helpful if someone passes away, Tigran said. Hours worked by children, employees, custom farmers, etc. cannot be counted as material participation. Farmers must prove they have owned rented out property for 10 or more years, must be the landlord, and have a written lease in place. Landowners who have only cash rented their property do not qualify as materially participating and are not eligible for that exclusion. Those participating in this tax exclusion must be 55 years of age or older, retired from or no longer materially participating in working on the farm, and must be the landlord receiving income from the land in some form of rent. Those renting out their land for income are no longer materially participating. If crop share producers put their income on a farm on a form 4835 and do not pay self-employment tax, they are considered not materially participating and qualify for the exclusion. But if I pay self-employment tax on my crop share income because I'm making decisions on the farm or paying for half of the cost and furnish half the tools and consult with a tenant, then I have to put it on a Schedule F and pay self-employment tax. I'm not considered a retired farmer, so I can't exclude this income, said Tigran. She said the CRP land does not count as a farming business and is not eligible for the exclusion. If you were a farmer and now you still have CRP, but you don't materially participate in your farming business anymore, your CRP income is not going to prevent you from qualifying for the rental income exclusion for the ground you're renting out, Tigran said. However, income from the CRP itself does not get to be excluded since it is considered farm rental income. It is not considered farm rent. Affected farmers will need to reflect this decision on their Iowa tax forms, making a single lifetime election to take part in the income exclusion option or the CGD. If this year you file your tax return and make an election for the Iowa capital gains deduction, you can't ever make this income exclusion election, said Tigran. Also, if you choose to exclude your rental income this year, you're making a lifetime election, and if you sell the property later, you will not be eligible to exclude the gain from Iowa tax on that sale. She added that if farmers decide to exclude their rental income, they can no longer take the Iowa Beginning Farmer Tax Credit nor the Iowa Capital Gain Deduction. Tigran said if farmers own two parcels of land, having owned one for 50 years and the other for only 5 years, and both are rented out, farmers can take the farm rental income exclusion for the parcel owned for 50 years, but not for the parcel owned for 5 years until it has been held for another 5 years. If you participated in a lifetime exchange where land has been traded, you get to count the holding period of the property you relinquished because your basis just carried over, Tidgren said. She said those who are remainder interest holders of land handed down from family get to count the entire period of time the previous holder had the life estate as part of their own holding period. Tidgren said for married couples filing jointly and holding property as joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, or WROS, the land automatically goes to the surviving spouse upon the death of the other. The surviving spouse can count 100% of time the land was held with the deceased spouse under the WROS stipulation. She said in the case with land owned as tenants in common, the surviving spouse would need to wait 10 years to meet the holding requirement. If land is owned by an LLC that is owned by more than one person, it's a partnership, and any rental income from that partnership is not eligible. If land is in an S corporation, it is also not eligible, nor is land placed in an irrevocable trust. Assets in revocable living trusts are disregarded for federal purposes and are eligible for the exclusion. Tidgren said in 2023, the only people who could qualify for the CGD were those who had net gain from a sale of real estate property used in the farming business. This is what changed, she said. Real property used in a farming business is still eligible for the Iowa capital gains deduction as long as property had been owned for at least 10 years and owners materially participated in a farming business for 10 years. Retired farmers can qualify, but their 10 years of material participation can be any 10 years in the past. The only way you can take the Iowa capital gains deduction if you're retired is to make a single lifetime election, because to make that election to not pay capital gains tax is mutually exclusive from my single lifetime election to not pay tax on my farm income from a farm tenancy agreement. So you can do one or the other, but you can't do both, said Tidgren. Tidgren added that those thinking about selling their land might want to reconsider taking the farm income exclusion. She said anyone can take advantage of the Iowa CGD, but those aged 55 or older and no longer working on the farm are the ones who need to make the lifetime election choice. I can be 35 and sell my land, and if I've owned it for 20 years and materially participated on the farm for 10 years, I qualify for the Iowa capital gains deduction, she said. If I have in the past taken the Iowa capital gains deduction, but now I'm a retired farmer and want to exclude my rental income, it's okay. You can do it. The fact that you took it in the past doesn't matter. What matters is, once you're 55 or older and not retired, you can make only one or the other election, but not both. She said another way to sell land in Iowa and get the CGD is to sell farmland to a relative, excluding nieces, nephews, aunts, and uncles. Selling that way does not require land ownership for 10 years, nor material participation on the farm for 10 years, yet the CGD is attainable. If selling farmland to a corporation or LLC where one of my relatives owns any interest in that entity, then it qualifies as a relative and I can meet the capital gains deduction requirement without having to have materially participated for 10 years or own the property for 10 years, said Tidgren. She said of livestock producers, no farmer gets to take the Iowa CGD for the sale of their livestock anymore unless they're a retired farmer and liquidating at least 90% of the farm business. Those farmers would be able to exclude the gain from the sale of the livestock. More information on the Iowa tax law changes can be found at the Center for Agricultural Law and Taxation at https://www.calt.iastate.edu/people. Now we come to an article entitled Facts About Hail, the Icy Precipitation Often Encountered in Spring and Summer. It's by Isabel O'Malley of the Associated Press. Intense storms swept through Kansas and Missouri on Wednesday and brought whipping winds, possible tornadoes, and what some described as gorilla hail. In Kansas, hail nearly the size of a softball and measuring 4 inches was reported in the town of Wabansee, and 3-inch hail was reported in Geary County near Junction City and Fort Riley. Here are some facts about hail according to the National Weather Service. Hail is a type of frozen precipitation that forms during thunderstorms, typically in the spring and summer months in the U.S. Strong updrafts, which is the upward flow of air in a thunderstorm, carry up very small particles called ice nuclei that water freezes onto when it passes the freezing level in the atmosphere. Small ice balls start forming, and as they try to fall towards the Earth's surface, they can get tossed back up to the top of the storm by another updraft. Each trip above and below freezing adds another layer of ice until the hail becomes heavy enough to fall down to Earth. The size of hail varies and can be as small as a penny or larger than apples due to varying updraft strengths, said Mark Fuchs, senior service hydrologist at the National Weather Service in St. Louis, Missouri. The stronger the updraft, the larger the hail can be. Anything bigger than 2 inches is really big, he said. The largest recorded hailstone in the U.S. was nearly as big as a volleyball and fell on July 23, 2010 in Vivian, South Dakota. It was 8 inches in diameter and weighed almost 2 pounds. Hail causes about $1 billion damage to crops and property annually. A hailstorm that hit Kansas City on April 10, 2001 was the costliest ever in the U.S., causing about $2 billion in damage. Now we'll turn to the sports page and we'll read the article entitled FD Graduate Ayala Earns 3 Seed for NCAA Tournament. This is written by Dana Becker and the dateline is Kansas City. The best amateur collegiate wrestlers in the world will come together here March 21 through 23 for the NCAA Division I Championships inside the T-Mobile Arena. Iowa, Iowa State, and Northern Iowa will be well represented throughout the brackets with 2 1-T5 combined qualifiers. Leading the way for the Hawkeyes will be former Fort Dodge Senior High state champions Drake Ayala and Brody Teske. Ayala is one of 5 Iowa qualifiers who earned a top 10 seed. Ayala, a sophomore competing at 125 pounds, is the number 3 seed, with Teske, who is a senior at 133 pounds, is the number 15 seed. Throughout the season, Ayala was tested, going 23-4 overall, including a win versus number 1 seed Braden Davis of Penn State. He is also 1-1 against number 4 seed Matt Ramos of Purdue. Rial Woods is the other 3 seed for the Hawkeyes, as the senior competes at 141 pounds. Michael Caliendo is the 6th seed at 165, Patrick Kennedy the number 7 seed at 174, and Zach Glazer the 7th seed at 197. Caleb Rathjen, Jared Franken, and Bradley Hill are the other Iowa qualifiers. Younger Bastida is the highest seeded for the Cyclones, as the heavyweight is number 2. David Carr is the 4th seed at 165, and Anthony Ekamenea is the number 5 at 141. Carr is seeking a 5th All-American honor, who won the 2021 NCAA title and was a runner-up last year. He also finished 3rd in 2022. Evan Frost, Casey Swiderski, Cody Chittum, MJ Gayton, and Will Feldkamp are the other Iowa State qualifiers. Returning national runner-up Parker Keckerson earned his 2nd consecutive number 1 seed at 184 pounds after going a perfect 26-0 this past year for the Panthers. He is one of 7 qualifiers for the program under Doug Schwab. Cale Happel at 141 and Ryder Downey at 157 both earned top 10 seeds. Julian Farber, Jack Thompson, Jared Sima, and Wyatt Volker are also slated for matches. All the action will air on ESPN networks leading up to Saturday's championship finals. The morning sessions air on ESPNU with the evening sessions on ESPN. All sessions stream on ESPN+. And in men's college basketball, return the favor. Iowa State exacts revenge on Kansas State. This is written by Dave Scretta, Dateline Kansas City. Iowa State applied the lessons it learned from a loss to Kansas State last weekend to its rematch in the Big 12 tournament. The Cyclones relentlessly pressured the ball Thursday night, forcing 20 turnovers. They built a big edge in second-chance points, and they drove hard to the basket, offsetting some cold shooting from the three-point line by parading to the foul line 31 times. The result was a 76-57 victory for the seventh-ranked Cyclones and a spot in the semifinal round. On Saturday, Cyclones coach T.J. Otzelberger said, "They were the aggressive team. They took it to us, and I thought that really helped us today because of the respect we have for them. Our guys knew in our preparation we had to be at our very best. We're fortunate the areas we focus on with paint points, second chance points, points off turnovers, those are the things we hang our hats on," Otzelberger added, "and our guys did a tremendous job of focusing on those areas." Robert Jones scored 18 points, Trey King added 16, and Keyshawn Gilbert had 12, along with 6 steals to help 4th-seeded Iowa State advance to play number 14 Baylor or Cincinnati for a spot in the conference championship. "We didn't play well, but it was because of them," Kansas State coach Jerome Tang said. "They came ready to play." Tyler Perry had 18 points, Arthur Kaluma scored 13, and Will McNair Jr. had 12 points for the 10th-seeded Kansas State, which closed to within 40-39 with about 16 minutes to go when the Wildcats' turnovers really began to pile up. Now the Wildcats are left to wondering whether they did enough to earn an NCAA tournament bid. "We didn't duck anybody in what we did," Tang said, proceeding to spend several minutes making their case. "We have elite quad one wins. We have no bad losses. I thought last night against Texas, when we won, we were in the NCAA tournament." Kansas State appeared to be hanging on the NCAA bubble until the late season losses to Cincinnati and Kansas put Tang's team in true desperation mode. The Wildcats responded with a win over Iowa State on Senior Day, then beat 7th-seeded Texas, an almost certain tourney team, on Wednesday to earn the opportunity for another marquee win over the Cyclones. But this is the Big 12 tournament where Iowa State always seems to show up. The four-time champs methodically went about their business in the first half Thursday night, building a 34-27 halftime lead by beating Kansas State to loose balls and turning dominance on the paint in the paint into a bunch of second-chance baskets. They won the kind of hustle plays Kansas State won when the teams met in Bramlage Coliseum last Saturday. The Wildcats tried to make a second-half run, closing within 40-39 on McNair's layup with 16 minutes to go, but then a team ranked 338th out of 351 teams in Division I in turnovers proceeded to cough the ball up on 5 of its next 7 trips down the floor, and the Cyclones capitalized behind Hassan Ward and Milan Momchilovich to pull away again. They outscored Kansas State 26-6 over the next 10 minutes to put the game away. "We're a defensive-minded team first and foremost," King said, "and we pride ourselves on getting stops. We saw the lead get cut down to 1, and in our mind, we really focused on getting those stops, and our team did a great job of responding." Iowa can't stop OSU, Dateline Minneapolis. Jameson Battle scored all 23 of his points in the second half, and Ohio State never trailed in beating Iowa 90-78 in the Big Ten tournament on Thursday. The 10th-seeded Buckeyes will play 2nd-seeded and number 13th-ranked Illinois in the quarterfinals on Friday. Illinois won the regular season matchup 87-75 on January the 30th. That was before Jake Diebler took over as interim head coach. Under Diebler, the Buckeyes have won 6 of 7 games, including the last 5. Diebler took over for Chris Holtman, who was fired by Ohio State in mid-February and was hired by DePaul as its coach earlier Thursday. "I'm so happy for Coach Holtman," Diebler said on the court in a post-game broadcast interview. "So happy for him, and he's going to do great. He's a great coach. But listen, our guys have come together. They've battled. We've raised our toughness and our togetherness, and that's been the biggest difference." Bruce Thornton added 14 points and 9 assists for the Buckeyes. Scotty Milton scored 11 of his 13 points in the first half when Ohio State led 43-38. Roddy Gale Jr. scored 10 points. Battle had 9 rebounds. The Buckeyes shot 52% and made 11 to 20 three-pointers. Peyton Sanford led the 7-seeded Hawkeyes with 19 points. Tony Perkins, who had 7 assists, and Ben Cricky each scored 13 points, and Owen Freeman finished with 10 points and 9 rebounds. Ohio State never trailed with 4 straight points from Thornton, giving the Buckeyes their largest lead of 12 with just over 6 minutes to go. Iowa didn't get closer than 8 thereafter. Middleton hit 3 from behind the arc as the Buckeyes made 8 of 11 three-point tries and shot 61% from the field in the first half. Iowa wasn't far behind with 5 threes and 54% shooting, but fell off to 33% in the second half. Here's some scores from the Big Ten tournament. Michigan State defeated Minnesota 77-67. Wisconsin defeated Maryland 87-56. In the Big 12 tournament, Houston topped TCU 60-45, and Texas Tech knocked off BYU 81-67. One last article. Dinnebier named Player of the Year. Drake sweeps MVC men's women's top honors. The MVC regular season champion Drake women's basketball team garnered multiple individual honors. The Bulldogs were represented by a trio of all-conference selections: Grace Berg, the Defensive Player of the Year Anna Miller, and the Player of the Year Katie Dinnebier. Susie Glazer-Burt head coach Allison Pullman was also honored as the league's Coach of the Year. Katie Dinnebier is the 9th player in Drake history to win the Jackie Stiles Missouri Valley Conference Player of the Year Award and the first since current staff member Becca Hittner won 3 in a row from 2018 to 2020. Dinnebier is one of just 2 players in NCAA Division I this season to average at least 18 points, 6.5 assists, and 2.5 steals per game. Her exact scoring average, 18.1 points per game, led Drake this season. Dinnebier, a member of the MVC All-Defensive Team, is also a stellar stopper for the Bulldogs with a league-high 77 total steals. She has scored double digits 29 times this season with 2 30-point performances. Earlier this season, Katie logged the second triple-double in program history in a win at UNI with 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 10 assists. That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette and the Fort Dodge Messenger. I'm your reader, Scott Splavik. Thanks for sharing your time with IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.